Now, the advantages and disadvantages of IRR, internal rate of return. Like how NPV advantages and disadvantages we have seen, we can also look into the advantages and disadvantages of internal rate of return. Advantages consist of that IRR has number of benefits. It considers the time value of money, the percentage, and therefore it is easily understood. This uses the cash flow and not the profit. It considers the whole life of the project. It means the firm selecting the projects where internal rate of return exceeds the cost of the capital should also be increased and the shareholders' wealth. Disadvantages are many. It is not a measure of absolute profitability. Interpolation of the provides that estimation or estimate that an accurate estimate requires the use of the spreadsheet program, and it is fairly complicated to calculate. Non-conventional cash flow may give rise to the multiple internal rate of returns, which means that interpolation method, it cannot be used. Difficulties with IRR approach states that the interpolation only provides an estimate, and an accurate estimate requires the use of spreadsheet program. The cost of the capital calculation itself is also only an estimate, and if the margin between the required return or the internal rate of returns is small, this lack of accuracy could actually mean that the wrong decision is taken. And another drawback is that IRR is that of the non-conventional cash flow may give rise to no IRR or the multiple IRRs. NPV versus IRR. Now, net present value, internal rate of return. These are the two methods we have seen. Which one is a suitable that we have to see? We have seen advantages, disadvantages, both. Now, what is this NPV versus IRR? Both NPV and IRR are the investment appraisal techniques which discount cash flow and are superior to the basic techniques such as ROS method or the payback method. Okay, then however, only NPV can be used to distinguish between the two mutually exclusive projects. NPV is therefore is the better technique for choosing between the projects, and the advantages of the NPV is that it tells us about absolute increase in the shareholders' value or wealth as the result of accepting the project at the current cost of the capital. The internal rate of return simply tells us how far the cost of the capital could increase before the project would not be worth accepting. The modified internal rate of return, that is MIRR, solves many of these problems with the conventional internal rate of return. Now, we have come to the stage of understanding that estimating cost of the capital using CAPM. Okay? Capital CAPM that we have to use. In the analysis so far, the company's cost of the capital was used to discount and forecasted cash flow of the new project. Many companies estimates the rate of return required by the investor in their securities. And towards this purpose, a company's cost of the capital is used to discount cash flow in all the new projects. This is not an accurate method, since the risk of existing assets of the company may differ from the risk of the new project assets. Since the investors are required the higher rate of return from very risky company, such a company will have the higher cost of the capital and will set a higher discount rate for its new investment opportunities. The cost of the capital or the required rate of return or the project would be same as the one on the company's existing assets if the risk is the same. The company's cost of the capital is the correct discount rate for the project that have the same risk as the company's existing business also. If the project risk is difficulties from the risk of existing assets, the project has to be evaluated at its own opportunity cost of the capital. So the true cost of the capital depends on the use of which it's put. The capital assets pricing model, capital asset pricing model, that is CAPM, can be used for estimating the company's cost of the capital only, and each project should be evaluated at its own opportunity cost of the capital. Capital assets pricing theory, CAPM theory, is tell us to invest in any project offering a return that more than the compensate for the project's beta, which measures the amount that investor expects in the stock prices to change for each 1% additional change in the market risk. The discount rate increases as the project beta increases. However, the companies require the different rate of return from the different categories of the investment. So higher the beta risk associated with an investment, the higher the expected rate of return, and must be compensated with the investor for assuming the risk. The CAPM provides the framework for analyzing the relationship between the risk and the return. CAPM also holds that there is a minimum required rate of return even if there is no risk, plus a premium for all the non-diversifiable risk associated with the investment. Project should be evaluated as portfolio, and there is a reduction of the risk when they are combined. To calculate the company's cost of the capital, the beta of its assets has to be ascertained. The beta cannot be plugged into the capital asset pricing and capital asset pricing model to find the company's cost of the capital, because the stock's beta reflects both business as well as financial risk. The beta has to be adjusted to remove the financial appraisal effect of the financial risk, since the borrowing increases the beta and the expected return of its stock. A more reliable estimate is an average of estimated betas for group of companies in the similar industries. While estimating the betas, the fudge factor to the discount rate to offset the bad outcome of the projected should be avoided. And in case where the project beta cannot be calculated directly, then the identification of the characteristic of the high and low beta assets, for instance, a cyclical investment or high beta investment, that would help to figure out the effect on the cash flow. Finally, the operating leverage that should be assessed, since this is the high fixed production charge, are to be fixed financial charge resulting into the increase in beta. The expected rate of return calculated from the capital assets pricing model is given here, and its nomenclature is also given. So where R is equal to RF plus B into bracket RM minus RF bracket complete, where the small r is a discount rate and RF is the interest rate on the risk-free assets like the treasury bills, and RM expected return can be plugged into the standard discounted cash flow formula. The capital asset pricing model values only the cash flow for the first period, that is called C1. Projects, however, yields a cash flow for the several years if the risk-adjusted rate is used to discount the cash flow. We assume that the cumulative risk increases at the constant rate, and the assumption would be held when the project's beta is constant or the risk per period is a constant. Now coming down to understand the financial analysis, different methods and everything we have seen there in the financial appraisal. Now analysis of the financial statements. The integral aspect of the financial appraisal is the financial analysis of which takes into account that the financial futures of the project, especially the source of finance. So the financial analysis helps to determine the smooth operation of the project over its entire life cycle. And the two major aspects of the financial analysis are, one is the liquidity analysis and second one is the capital analysis. Okay, capital analysis, liquidity analysis and the capital analysis. In any case, for this purpose, the ratios are employed which reveals the existing strength and the weakness of the project in this while calculating it. First, let us understand what is liquidity analysis. The liquidity ratio or the solvency ratio, which is also called as the solvency ratio. Liquidity ratio or the solvency ratio, it measures the project's ability to meet the short-term obligations. Okay, so two ratios are calculated to measure the liquidity, the current ratio and quick ratio. Current ratio and quick ratio. What is this current ratio means? The current ratio is nothing but it is defined as a current asset, which consists of the cash, bank balances, investment in securities, accounts receivable, sundry debtors, and the inventories. If this is divided by the current liabilities, that is current asset divided by current liabilities consist of what? Current liabilities consist of accounts payable, sundry creditors, short-term loans, short-term creditors, and the advances from the customers. It is computed by using the formula current ratio is equal to current asset divided by current liability, very simple formula. The current ratio measures the assets which are closest to being a cash over those liabilities, which is closest to being payable. It is an indicator of the extent to which the short-term creditors are covered by the assets that are expected to be converted into cash in a period which is corresponding to the maturity of the claims. And a current ratio 1.5 to 1 is considered as it is acceptable. Now, quick ratio. Quick ratio is also called as an acid test ratio. Since the inventories among the current assets are not quite liquid, the quick asset ratio or quick ratio excludes it, and the quick ratio includes only the assets which can be readily converted into the cash and constitutes a better test of the liquidity. So the quick ratio is equal to current asset minus inventories, current assets minus inventories divided by the current liabilities. And the ratio which comes, ideally, quick ratio should be 1:1, is considered as a good from the liquidity point of view. Okay, then capital structure analysis. Long-term solvency ratio, which measures the project's ability to meet the long-term commitments also to creditors and the creditors' claims on the company, and the income arises from the contractual obligations which must be honored. So the two long-term solvency ratios are debt utilization ratio and second one is a coverage ratio. So both the ratios we have to see. Debt utilization ratio. How to calculate debt utilization ratio and what is the relevance of it? The debt utilization ratio measures a company's degree of indebtedness. Company's degree of indebtedness, which measures the proportion of the company's assets financed by the debt relative to the proportion of the financed by the equity. Debt includes current liabilities and the long-term debts. Creditor prefers low debts and ratio because the lower the ratio, greater the cushion against the creditors' losses in the event of liquidation. Owners are generally preferring the higher level, either to magnify the earning, increase the earning, or to retain the control on the company. So the total debt ratio can be calculated by total debt divided by total assets. The debt equity ratio is also a simple way it can be calculated. Debt equity ratio is the value of the total debts divided by the book value of the equity. In calculation of the debt, a short-term obligation of the less than 1 year duration can be excluded. So the debt equity ratio is a long-term liabilities into bracket debt, okay, long-term liabilities into bracket debt divided by the shareholders' equity. This can give you the debt equity ratio. Fixed asset coverage ratio is also important. The two other ratios, which is relating to the long-term liabilities or long-term stabilities, not liabilities, which is used by the developing finance institution, is in appraisal of the projects are fixed assets coverage ratio and debt coverage. These two ratios. So the two fixed asset coverage ratios shows that number of times the fixed assets covers the loan. Market value ratio is also relates to the company's share price to its earning and its book value per share. These ratios are the performance index of the company and indicates that the investor perception of the company's performance and the future prospects also. Debt coverage ratio is also measures the degree to which the fixed payment are covered by the operating profit. The ratio which emphasizes the ability of the project to generate the adequate cash flow to service its financial charges. The debt coverage ratio of the two is considered is a good. Okay, then another ratio is the interest coverage ratio. The interest coverage ratio measures the number of times the interest expenses are earned or covered by the profits. So the interest coverage ratio can be calculated by net profit before taxes plus interest divided by simple interest. Price earning ratio, that is PE, is simple and it can be calculated, and it relates to first the per share earning to price of the share, that is per equity or price earning ratio is equal to market price per share divided by earning per share. So this PE ratio are the computed for the companies as well as for the market. So PE ratios generally are higher for the companies with a high growth prospect or potential and the lower for the riskier companies. Market book value ratio is also very important, and that can be calculated. Market or book value ratio, the ratio of the market price of the share of the company to its book value per share gives an indication of the how investors regard the company. Generally, what happens if the return on assets are high, these shares are sold at a higher multiples of the book value and than those of the low return. So book value per share is the sum of the net worth, that is paid up capital plus reserve, and divided by the number of shares, that is outstanding. So the book value per share can be calculated as total net worth divided by number of shares which are outstanding. Market book value ratio, if the market price per share is divided by the book value, we get the market book value ratio. Break-even point. This is very important in entire the project finance. Okay, What is this break-even point means? Break-even is an essential aspect of the financial appraisal and is determination of break-even point. Unless it is determined, other measures make no sense. So, to calculate and project cash flow, it is important to assess the break-even point. Break-even point is that level of the production that sells at which total revenue are exactly equal to the operation cost. Break-even point occurs at that production level at which the net operating income, that is sales minus operating cost, is zero. So it indicates the volume necessary for the profitable operations of the project. With the help of the break-even analysis, the quantity which is required to be produced at the given sales price per unit to cover the total fixed cost and variable cost can be found. So, the break-even point, the point beyond which the company starts making profit. If this BEP or break-even point is too high, the price assumed for the output may have to be reviewed. In summary, the viability of the project can be assessed with the help of the break-even point. For the purpose of the break-even analysis, the conventional income statement has to be classified into fixed cost and variable cost. An example of the conventional income statement is presented in the table number 6.1, which is in your book and which is classified into fixed and the variable expenses. This table also you can very well see, and here it is mentioned, here is the break-even point. Here rupee amount is shown and here units are sold. For these many units sold, what is the fixed cost and what is the variable cost is also given here. If this is diagonally corrected, income as well as the loss is corrected, then in that case, this is the point where it crosses is called as a break-even point. Analysis is a simple which is given here in this table that you can see very well subsequently also, no issues. Appraisal of advanced manufacturing system. So, intangible and tangible benefits of appraisal of advanced manufacturing system. Intangible and tangible benefits consist of for valuation of advanced manufacturing system. The conventional appraisal techniques that may be unsuitable since there is a large number of hidden benefits in such a system. And these benefits are the tangible and intangible nature, which have been already quantified. Few of such benefits of the advanced manufacturing system are listed here. The quantification of such benefits can be carried out by analytic hierarchy process or other process. So, strategic issues. Strategic issues consist of, to be considered, the strategic issue to be considered before taking the decision on acceptance of the rejection of the proposal to set up an advanced manufacturing system as compared to other traditional manufacturing systems are the goal of the company in 7 into 10 years. The advantage and the investment is going to be provided over competitors. Then ability to capture the greater proportion of the market for the company's product. Fourth one is ability to respond to the market charges quickly and the impact of the improvement in the quality and the consistent output of the obtaining the competitiveness of the advantages. Incremental sales resulting from the publicity which is gained from the companies installing the advanced manufacturing technology. popularity. Okay, the advanced system should be viewed as long term and a strategic move and not as a tactical adjustment in the strategy. So the installation of such a system in a comparable to the other strategic moves, like installing the new computing system or hiring the new dynamic result oriented but a very highly paid CEO. The benefits of such a move, which cannot be immediately quantified, and their impact is felt in long run. Shortcomings of the traditional financial analysis for advanced manufacturing system like FMS is traditional evaluation assumes that the impact of the investment is limited to the immediate environmental of the equipment. That is one of the shortcomings. Then capabilities and the rate of the new equipments are assumed to be a well-known and do not change, that is not increase, but will decrease as the machine's age increases. Saving and the benefit can be estimated with accuracy of ease. The pros and cons of the project can be envisaged by manager or the specialized concern with the project. Evaluation should be done easy by case. These assumptions are not applicable to FMS as an integrate to complete the facilities of the different stages of manufacturing. CNC should be just to reduce the labor cost, but FMS to the reducing labor cost can also help in control and in process of inspection, work tracking, transportation, tool controls, scheduling, and the production control. FMS would require a smaller and dedicated team, which is generally more motivated, loyal, and sincere too. It has generally been observed that in FMS, that the capabilities of the system, which tends to increase over the passage of time, because of increase in the understanding of operations of the system and the accumulated expenses, upgradation of the system, both software as well as hardware, to speed up the operations and the intrinsic flexibility of the system also. FMS has the flexibility to process several parts of the types of the simultaneously. In contrast, the transfer line requires the full capital expenditure before production can start. However, on the other hand, the changes in the production type or mix or the volume, it cannot be easily effected in transfer line, since such changes result into underutilization of the line. So actual cost and the benefits are difficult to calculate in FMS. Mainly, many hidden costs like skilled labor, training cost due to the adjustment or refining, it cannot be accurately estimated. So the hidden and non-financial saving, like simple and the fast engineering changes, changeover, reduction of the lead time, as well as it is difficult to quantify, to take into the calculation of the profit and loss account. Further, this FMS operations and the benefits which cut across the various functions and the broader team is required to evaluate the FMS project. So finally, the capital cost cannot be appreciated on case-to-case basis. So they have to be evaluated by the senior management of the company on a long-term plan basis of, say, 5 to 10 years' time. Financial evaluation of the FMS is feasible in case of, number one, the total FMS picture is taken into consideration by evaluating, number one, the cost. Okay, the cost is nothing but it is a direct and indirect traditional system. And second one is the saving that is direct and indirect non-financial saving of FMS. And second point is the all intangible benefits which are evaluated and a hypothetical value which is attached to the every evaluated benefits. Then estimation of the saving and the cost over 7 to 10 years of the period, taking into consideration long-term impact of FMS. Probability and the sensitivity are taken into account in this FMS system, and justification or appraisal results are seen in broader strategic perspective. Before rejecting the FMS investment proposal, there are some factors which are required to be, there are some factors which are required to be considered. One, what are those options? What happens if the investment is not made in the FMS? Then what are the methods of the employed by the competitors? How can benefit be FMS, open up the new market and make the company more competitive? With this, we complete our financial appraisal. Thank you very much.